Joy Cardine with you on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio, 9 minutes past 6 o'clock on this Wednesday, February the 21st. And congratulations to the winners in yesterday's primary election in your community. Let me take a moment to announce that Wisconsin Public Radio, along with our We the People Wisconsin partners, will be sponsoring and broadcasting a statewide debate between the two candidates now vying for a seat on the Wisconsin Supreme Court. Madison attorney Linda Clifford and Washington County Judge Annette Ziegler are advancing to the April 3rd general election to fill the seat from a retiring Supreme Court justice. They have agreed to debate on Friday, March 30th at 7 p.m. We will remind you about that throughout the coming month and likely do some candidate forums on this program as well. But I wanted you to know that we will be involved in organizing and broadcasting this debate on March 30th. Now you can be the judge on another topic, that being Walmart and other big box stores. Are they good for our communities, for workers, for consumers, for our economy, or are they selfish retailers who drive mom and pops out of business, outsource American jobs, mistreat their workers in order to offer us low prices? We have heard from guests in the recent past who are not fans of Walmart. Last month, a visiting reporter who wrote a book on the Walmart effect said that the giant retailer wasn't all bad, but really wasn't all good either, and said communities really need to weigh the pros and cons before welcoming a Walmart store with open arms. Today we'll hear from another guest who says Walmart is being unfairly vilified and will tell us why Walmart, in his opinion, backed up by his research, is good for us. And we will welcome your input and questions as always at 1-800-642-1234. In Madison, 263-1890. Do you go out of your way to pick up a deal at Walmart, or do you go out of your way to avoid shopping there altogether? If you're in one of the many Wisconsin communities that battled recently over building a Walmart, are you satisfied now or not with the store being there? Our guest is the author of The Walmart Revolution, How Big Box Stores Benefit Consumers, Workers, and the Economy. Richard Vetter is a distinguished professor of economics at Ohio University, a visiting scholar at the American Enterprise Institute, and director of the Center for College Affordability and Productivity in Washington, D.C. Good morning.
Glad to be with you.
So let me first start with your affiliation with the American Enterprise Institute, which some have noted has accepted money from the Walmart Foundation, actually the Walton Family Foundation. Should that make us question the validity of the arguments in your book?
It should have absolutely nothing to do with it. First of all, when I didn't know this, anything about Walton money being given to the American Enterprise Institute. By the way, the American Enterprise Institute has a budget of, at least $20 million, $25 million a year. And mm-hmm. I think the amount of money involved total over several years was something like $25,000. So it was an inconsequential amount of money given by not the company, but by members of the Walton family. The American Enterprise Institute that I didn't know about until the book was done and was told about by a New York Times reporter. So absolutely had no impact whatsoever on what I did. The AEI keeps sort of a wall between the fundraising part of the operation and the research part of the operation to avoid notions of conflicts of interest.
Yeah. So why did you do this book?
Well, I did it because I had wondered about Walmart. There seemed to be a lot of emotion about Walmart. A lot of people felt very strongly about it. Most of it negative, but there were some admirers out there. Well, I ought to look at it myself. I'm an economic historian by trade, and I kind of like to put things in historical context. And I don't think anyone had really looked at Walmart in a broader historical context. Nor did I think most people who had written on Walmart been terribly objective about it, sort of even-handed. The one fellow you mentioned you had interviewed earlier, I think it was Mr. Fishman, probably.
Yes, Charles Fishman.
Charles Fishman came the closest, I thought, to being objective. He at least made an attempt to look at the evidence on both sides. But most of the writers had sort of had an axe to grind against Walmart, and I thought, well, let me look into it and see what I found. starting out with a suspicion that Walmart wasn't as bad as people were making it out, but that was reinforced enormously during the course of doing the research.
Yeah, Charles Fishman said that Walmart, or concluded that Walmart was neither all good or all evil. Is that where you...
Yeah, I agree with that. I think the only difference between myself and Fishman, there are some differences in the kind of research I report, and I'm more of a professional economist than Mr. Fishman, which may be good or may be bad. I'm not bragging about that, but so I come at it from that perspective. But I also probably come down a little more on the side that, on balance, the good greatly outweighs the bad for Walmart. There are, you know, there are things in any retail operation or any sort of economic innovation, there are always going to be some negative consequences as well as positive ones. But to me, the positive consequences, the plus outweighs the minus or the bad.
We'll talk about the good and the bad coming up after we check our weather forecast. We are talking with Richard Vedder. He's a distinguished professor of economics at Ohio University. He is the author, co-author with Wendell Cox, of The Walmart Revolution: How Big Box Stores Benefit Consumers, Workers, and the Economy. And we welcome your thoughts and questions for him about Walmart. 1-800-642-1234. In Madison, 263-1890. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Good to have you with us on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Joy Cardine. 17 minutes past 6 o'clock on this Wednesday, February the 21st. Coming up during At Issue with Ben Marins after 5 o'clock, Ben and his guests will discuss legislation to ban investments in the Sudan, being introduced today at the state capitol. That's coming up after 5. We're talking about Walmart with a guest who says, on the whole, Walmart is good for us. Walmart is good for workers, for consumers, for the economy. What do you think? What questions do you have? 1-800-642-1234 in Madison, 263-1890. Richard Vedder is co-author of the book, The Walmart Revolution. We also, Richard Vedder, before we go to the phones, talked with a guest. This wasn't so recently, but I believe the name of the book was The High Cost of Low Prices. Certainly, everybody can agree that low prices, that's a nice thing to have lots of products at low prices, but does it come at too high a cost?
Well, I don't think so. I think what Walmart has, first of all, I think meeting the needs of consumers is terribly important. I don't think you can underestimate the importance of that need. Now, that does that mean that the ends justify any sort of means of getting there? And obviously, there are some limits, moral, ethical limits, and so on. I don't disagree with that. But I do think that when a person is able to get, say, a shirt at Walmart for a dollar less than she could buy it at the previous type of store that she had shopped at, and you have billions of these kind of transactions every year, that adds up to a lot of happiness and welfare gains for people, allow them to do other things with their lives and then with their resources that couldn't be done. So I can't stress that too much. On the other hand, my feeling is looking at most of the claims, they're overblown. There are examples where Walmart has done some inappropriate things. Of course, when you have 1.5 million workers or so in a company, that's bound to happen, given human nature, to some extent. I don't think systematically the company has mistreated its workers. I don't think it has behaved irresponsibly with respect to communities or globalization or any of these other issues. I think they're overblown criticisms for the most part.
Yeah. What about the news that we have here in Wisconsin and some other states that people who work at Walmart, big numbers of them, are not getting health benefits through their employer, but through programs for low-income people like Medicaid?
Well, first of all, about 45% of Walmart employees do get insurance through the company. And of the other 55%, a majority, a large majority, 45 out of that other 55, or 46 out of that other 55, get insurance from someone. A little over 90% of Walmart employees are have insurance. Now, close to 10% of those employees are on Medicaid or similar programs, but that isn't too unusual for people of low incomes who have unskilled jobs. If you would go to Target or Best Buy or Costco, maybe not. Costco pays its workers quite highly. They're they're the one sort of exception to the rule that one likes to look at in who criticize Walmart. But if you go to most of these other companies, you will find that they have similar problems of having people Medicaid. A person who's at Walmart for, say, 3 years working is very unlikely to be on Medicaid. There are a few of them, but very, very few. In other words, if they work their way up the scale at Walmart, they get to the point where they leave the Medicaid system.
How come Costco can pay its workers more than Walmart or these other big box stores?
Well, Walmart, first of all, Costco caters to a different type of customer to some extent than Walmart does, more of an upscale customer.
Yeah.
Well, for example, Costco is the largest seller of champagne in the United States, number one retailer of champagne in fine, high-quality wines. They reach upper-middle-class people. The volume of sales per worker at Costco is dramatically higher than it is at Sam's Club or at Walmart. They sell a lot of high-priced goods. So a Walmart worker, if they were selling a bottle of wine, might be selling a bottle of $6 wine to a customer. The Costco worker would be selling a bottle of $15 wine to a customer.
But isn't Walmart, you know, selling twice as much wine?
Not strangely enough, the average sale at a Costco store, I'm fairly certain of this, is actually higher than it is at a Sam's Club store by quite a margin. So surprisingly, the answer to that is no. It is true that in the regular super centers, Walmart has a tremendous volume. There's no question about that. But Walmart in the traditional, say, a super center type store pays its workers not wildly different than what, say, Target pays its workers. I don't think their pay is way out of line. Now, someone might say, well, $10 an hour is just not enough money, and they only work 30, 35 hours a week. They make $15,000 a year. You can't live on that. I'd be the first to admit that that is not a high wage, although most of these people are in households where there are other family members working as well. Not all of them, but a majority of them are. And they get earned income tax credits at all from the government, which adds some as well. So it is true that there are a lot of Walmart people who are on the lower end of the economic spectrum, but they're unskilled workers with little experience. If they weren't working at Walmart, what would they be doing with their lives? My guess is they would be lucky to be having a comparable job somewhere else.
I want to talk more about workers, but first let me go to the phones. Dave in Menominee. Hi, you're on the air.
Hi. If they weren't working at Walmart, they'd probably be doing what I was doing and a lot of my friends were doing before all the factory work left. I don't shop at Walmart. I will not unless I'm absolutely forced to somehow, and I haven't in years. I can tell you what happened here in our community of 35,000.
And this is Menominee, Michigan.
This is Menominee. Mm-hmm. And Walmart moved in to a large mall that we have. It had probably 20 or 30 stores in it. Walmart built onto the end of it about 8 years ago, and that mall is desolate. It's empty. There's maybe five stores in there. Walmart pretty much put everyone out of business. There used to be nice little specialty shops there. All of that is gone. It is absolutely empty.
And you blame Walmart for putting these businesses out of business.
Walmart's the only one there with maybe three other stores. I do blame Walmart. I'm a musician, and when one of those shops that folded was a music store and CD shop, and so now if I want to buy a CD, I got to go to Walmart and get a beeped version of a CD that they don't think is proper for somebody. And magazines, they will only sell certain magazines and only things that they think is appropriate and moral. So we have, what we have is a big a big monster eating up everything and deciding what is good for me.
Yeah. Dave, hold on a second. Let me get our guest in on this. Richard Vedder, Walmart puts the mom and pops out of business?
Yeah, I don't. I'm sure that the caller is correct in the facts that he stated. But I would disagree with one thing he said. He said Walmart put these stores out of business. Now, obviously, you needed the Walmart store there for that to happen. But who put the Walmart out of business were the customers. The people flocked to Walmart. They abandoned these other stores. Now, why did they abandon the other stores? Was Walmart holding a gun over the heads of these customers? No. Walmart offered goods that the people, rightly or wrongly, felt were more attractive in price, they had better choice, whatnot. I personally wish Walmart didn't censor magazines and records. I kind of share the caller's feelings on that, although I guess it is Walmart's prerogative as a private retailer to do what it wants and sell what it wants. But in terms of putting stores out of business, which I think is the thrust of the call, the people put those stores out of business. Walmart facilitated it by building a store of its own, but the people chose to go to Walmart, not to the other stores, probably because Walmart offered lower prices and perhaps larger selection.
Yeah. We often, when we do programs like this, do hear that, you know, if you buy locally, you can get, you know, the local hardware store is very comparable to Walmart. And it's just that people have this impression that they're going to get the best deal at Walmart.
Well, the irony of it is I go to the local hardware store still, unlike your caller. I don't go to Walmart very often myself. I kind of like to support the local merchant, and I kind of like, I'm willing to pay a dime or 15 cents more to buy some screws or something. There's certain convenience. You don't have to stand in long lines and so forth. But a lot of people feel otherwise, and they vote with their feet to go to Walmart. But this is a continuation of a long-term time tradition in retailing where new forms of retail innovation supplant old forms and what Joseph Schumpeter once called creative destruction.
Yeah, Dave, thanks for the call. I was going to go back to you, but you hung up. So instead, I'm going to Bob in Marinette, which is Menominee's twin city, right, Bob?
Yes, it is. Mm-hmm. Just wanted to mention that the stores, the majority of the stores that went out of that mall have nothing to do with the Walmart. I have personal friends with two of the managers from the stores that closed there, and it has to do with the amount of rent that's being charged and being able to manage the rent. These were all larger chain stores that were in there for the most part, and when they weigh what they pay for in another mall versus the mall that happened to be in Marinette, where Walmart was one of the anchor, or is one of the anchor stores, it had nothing to do with Walmart. And you look at his citation of the music store there, many music stores are closing because people prefer to purchase something like that online versus going to a local store.
Yeah. And so you don't blame Walmart, Bob?
No, I don't. I don't happen to particularly, you know, favor Walmart one way or the other, but I think that quite often your larger stores get characterized in that way.
And you know, I've got to hold it here because we're at newsbreak time, but we will continue talking about this after we check the latest news. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Joy Cardine. 6:36 now on this Wednesday, February the 21st. We're talking this hour with the co-author of the new book, The Walmart Revolution, How Big Box Stores Benefit Consumers, Workers, and the Economy. Do you think Walmart is good for us or not? 1-800-642-1234. 1-800-642-1234. In Madison, 263-1890, 263-1890. You can also send us an email with your question or comment to talk@wpr.org. talk@wpr.org. Richard Vedder is a distinguished professor of economics at Ohio University, a visiting scholar at the American Enterprise Institute, director of the Center for College Affordability and Productivity in Washington, D.C., co-author with Wendell Cox of The Walmart Revolution, How Big Box Stores Benefit Consumers, Workers, and the Economy, published by the American Enterprise Institute. We heard from two callers in our last half hour, Richard Vedder, both living in the same community or in neighboring communities that share the same mall. One saying Walmart put all the other mall stores out of business. The second caller saying, well, it really wasn't Walmart that did that. There were other factors involved. And I'm just wondering if you want to talk a little bit further about, you say it's not Walmart that's putting anybody out of business, it's the consumer, right?
Yeah. However, you know, obviously it takes Walmart to do that. Walmart is a competitor. And my guess is that both callers are partially right, that and I have my own community to go by in this regard, because we have brought a Walmart store in, and Kmart went out roughly the same time, but Kmart went out a little bit before Walmart came in. And one wonders, you know, you might say the anticipation of Walmart might have put them out, but it's hard to blame Walmart for putting someone out of business if they're not even open yet. So it's often, sometimes it's a little hard to say whether it really was Walmart or other factors that put them out. But historically, in the 1930s, the A&P grocery stores and the Midwest Kroger's and other chains started to come in, and small sort of mom-and-pop grocery stores went out. And there was a lot of lamenting of this fact. There were was legislation passed throughout the country trying to reduce this trend or reverse this trend, to little avail, I might add, because people preferred the large chain stores that had somewhat larger selection and lower prices. So Walmart is kind of keeping in sort of a rich historical tradition of new forms of innovation coming by. And I suspect Walmart's about ready to get its comeuppance, if you like.
What do you mean?
Well, I think in a couple of ways. First of all, they are clearly getting their comeuppance overseas. They're expanding rapidly overseas, and in some cases successfully. For example, in Mexico, they're quite successful. But in some societies and cultures they're going into, they're finding it very, very difficult to compete, because Walmart doesn't really have a good feeling for the local culture and traditions and the products that people like to use and so forth. They've gone out of business in Korea, for example. They're out of business now in Germany.
Mm-hmm. So is because they didn't understand local customers?
Yeah, they didn't understand the customers. Walmart seems to understand customers pretty well in this country. I would say so, because they're the largest retailer. They understand American retail traditions and consumer tastes very, very well. But they don't have that same advantage overseas, where the local people often are better. Another area where they may see their comeuppance a little bit is with respect to the Internet. Walmart does have an Internet presence. You can buy things through Walmart online. But it was a little slow and a little behind the times on this. And there are other retailers that are far more successful in terms of Internet shopping and are growing far faster and are even more profitable. eBay is, of course, the most famous example, but Amazon would be another, .com would be another example. So you know, more things change, the more they're the same. And Walmart, I think, in some ways has peaked. Their stock is today about what it was 7 years ago. Wall Street doesn't seem to be particularly high in Walmart these days.
Yeah, I was reading that their profits are down, or maybe it's the stock price that's down. So perhaps Walmart has peaked?
Well, yeah. Now, they had a new financial report out a day or two ago, and because I've been so busy doing interviews, so I haven't had a chance to read it. But I understand their profits, their actual profits were up over last year, continuing a trend that has gone on every year since the early 70s. But they weren't up enormously. And the growth in sales and profits has slowed for the company compared with the heady days of the 70s and 80s. They've saturated the American market to the point where sometimes you can go 5 miles and you'll see another Walmart. And so they're at a they've gone from being a growth company to being sort of a I wouldn't say stodgy mainline company, but more of a conventional mainline retail company. And so I think the glamour is off Walmart from an investor's point of view.
Yeah, and we've also seen and heard that Walmart is a little bit concerned about the bad press it's received over recent years, and started a new PR push and is really trying to change its image. So it must be hurting somehow.
Yeah, they're certainly trying to change the image. I don't know if they're trying to change the image because of the fall, because of sales and so forth, but I think they are concerned about the political environment in which they operate. Sam Walton was, and in this way, he was very much like John D. Rockefeller almost a century earlier, a very successful person who said, look, if people like what I'm doing, we're doing it right, we're doing it ethically, the publicity will take care of itself, we don't need public relations people and all that, and besides, they cost money, and I want to have low prices, and so we got to cut costs. So he was very much opposed to having public relations people, image makers, and so forth around him. The current president, Lee Scott, has changed that dramatically, and now Walmart is spending a ton of money on image makers and so forth. And in my mind, is somewhat mixed effects. I think in some cases it has softened its image, and people think more highly of Walmart. One area where I think Walmart had a huge public relations success, and it had nothing to do with the PR people, was during Hurricane Katrina, where they were into the communities even before the hurricane hit in some cases, bringing water and other things. And the New York Times said we ought to rename FEMA, WEMA, the Walmart Emergency, whatever it is, Management Agency. And so I think Walmart, when it does good works like that, I think it does an awful lot to improve its image.
Two other callers, Dan and Jefferson. Hi, Dan, you're on the air.
Hi. Yeah, I'd just like to make a comment. You know, I have to drive 20 minutes plus to even go to a Walmart, and I like shopping at Walmart. I get a Sam's Club membership at my work that they offer. And one thing I'd like to mention about Walmart, ain't just not everything is low price. A smart shopper does find out that some of their stuff is kind of high priced. What I'm getting at is they hire, which I've noticed, more disability old people that more companies, I personally think, would not hire because of image. They think, oh, okay, too many old people or too many handicapped people or disabled people might affect the image of the store and have people come in and buy from them. And I applaud Walmart for doing that. And I think that those are the people also, which I agree with your guest, is they're probably part of the percentage that isn't making a lot of money because they can't work a lot, you know, and they can't work the hours that, say, me or you or anybody else that can.
We get to Dan, and let me get our guest to respond to that before our weather break. Richard Vedder, the Walmart hires a lot of the disabled and elderly?
Yeah, well, you know, you go to the door, the greeters are often people who are retired. There's a lot of Walmart people on Medicare, which is consistent with the caller's comment. And I agree with him. I think there are a lot of people who are working in Walmart who wouldn't be working at all and are better off having this job opportunity.
Let's check that weather forecast. I think it's going to be another nice one today. And then we'll continue talking with Richard Vedder, co-author of The Walmart Revolution, How Big Box Stores Benefit Consumers, Workers, and the Economy. 1-800-642-1234, our toll-free number if you have a question or a story about Walmart. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network. This is the Ideas Network. I'm Joy Cardine. 13 minutes before 7 o'clock. Coming up after 7, we'll talk with the editor-in-chief of Reason Magazine, Nick Gillespie, who says that there's no war on the middle class. The middle class is doing just fine, thank you. And we'll wonder if you want to argue with him coming up after 7 o'clock. We're talking this hour with Richard Vedder, who is the co-author of The Walmart Revolution, talking about how Walmart is good for consumers and workers and the economy. Our next caller is Paul in Oshkosh. Hi, you're on the air.
Hello. A topic that I don't hear too much about when this is brought up is how does Walmart get their low prices? And it's very much related to supply and demand and the size that Walmart represents. A company starts working with Walmart, pretty soon they realize a large percentage of their sales occur through Walmart, and then Walmart has them. They lose the ability to negotiate because Walmart controls so much of their business. And it's well documented how many companies have gone out of business because of the negotiating tactics that the purchasing people at Walmart employ. So I'm wondering how that helps our economy and our workers and our jobs.
Mm-hmm. What about that, Professor Vetter?
Walmart is tough in negotiating with suppliers. The caller is right about that. I am told, by the way, it's very hard to get data and quantify objectively, you know, the extent of this particular problem, because a lot of this is anecdotal type evidence. I've talked to a few suppliers who say, yeah, Walmart's tough to deal with, and I keep asking, well, why do you keep dealing with Walmart? You could just simply go back to the way it was before when you didn't deal with them at all. And they say, well, as tough as they are to deal with them, they are important, and as the caller indicated, and we make money off Walmart in the final analysis, but it's hard to do. Some of them tell me, well, Walmart's bad, but Home Depot's worse. So I think any time you're dealing with a large purchaser of goods and services, you're going to have tough negotiations. But I think the idea that suppliers as a class are endangered or in some sort of at risk because of Walmart is simply not borne out by the facts. I think there are a lot of very healthy suppliers of Walmart, and I'm not just talking about big companies like Procter & Gamble, who are in their own right large corporations who sell to many, many people, but also some specialty suppliers such as the caller was talking about.
Yeah. So does this heavy-handed negotiation encourage companies that supply Walmart to use, I don't know, sweatshop labor overseas?
Well, it certainly encourages them to use overseas labor, and whether it's sweatshop or not, we can, you know, that's sort of an emotional Latin term, and I don't know how much sweating is going on in those workplaces. But the move towards globalization, I think it's a good area to, you know, of inquiry. The move towards globalization started long before Walmart came about, and Walmart is really not a prime mover in making that happen. I mean, if you go into a Best Buy electronics store and try to buy an American-made good, there aren't any. No, there is an electronic product hardly made in the United States anymore. And so it's not just Walmart that's doing this. It's because America has lost its, what us economists call, comparative advantage, our special advantages in manufacturing a large amount of ordinary goods.
Thanks to Paul. Rochelle in Port Washington is with us now. Hi.
Hi. My comment is that in Sockville, which is about 10 minutes from Port, there is a Walmart. It's been there for years, and they have proposed to build a new Supercenter Walmart right across the street from the one that there is. So they're going to leave that building and build a new, bigger and better. And there's a lot of, in the community, a lot of the people are having a problem with that because they are worried about it running other stores out of business, yet the smaller Walmart's been there for years, and I'm sure everybody in the area uses it. And if they wanted to use a Supercenter, they could drive 20 minutes and go to the Supercenter that's there. But in the community, there's a lot of people that are having issues with that.
Yeah, but you don't have the issue, Rochelle? You're not concerned about a Supercenter?
No, it doesn't. No. Mm-hmm. No, it doesn't bother me at all.
Yeah.
I don't understand. Well, the one thing I do is that they're leaving the enormous building that they have to build a new one, and the community is not sure what's going to happen with that building. But
yeah. You want to talk about that, Professor Vetter? Why build a big supercenter across the street from the existing Walmart?
Well, that's a business decision they made. They needed more room, I'm sure. Mm-hmm. The supercenters, for example, sell groceries. I don't know anything about this specific situation, obviously. But my guess is the old Walmart did not. Mm-hmm. And they need more space. They may need more parking. Mm-hmm. So Walmart, in order to serve customers, the people who will flock to this store, they need more land, more space, etc. So that's understandable. Now, you could raise a question, well, what's going to happen to the old building? And I'm sure people are. But this has happened time and time again throughout history. Walmart isn't the one who's started this trend. I mean, we've had malls built in the 50s and 60s on the outskirts of cities, Green Bay or Milwaukee or Madison, have malls built on the outskirts of the cities. And then what happened to some of the old buildings downtown? They closed, or some of the small strip malls went out of business because you got these new supersized malls that came in. And this is the constant change in American life. And most of those old malls, although they're not attractive particularly, the space gets used in some fashion or other. People come in at some time with some transitional costs. I'm the first to admit that. And so there are issues there. Some people say there are aesthetic issues there. But that's another area.
Thank you, Rochelle. Joan in Sherwood is with us now. Good morning.
Good morning. Thank you for taking my call. In the documentary, Walmart, The High Cost of Low Prices, I learned that while Walmart may do some good things, as a general rule, and from what I have learned, Walmart does more damage than good. Because, first of all, it makes billions and billions and billions of dollars of corporate profits, and the what they pay out in terms of their responsibility to their workers is nowhere in proportion to the profits that they make. And after all, consumers and workers are basically interchangeable. You don't buy unless you are working. And you, the exploited workers at Walmart are also the ones that are buying the cheap consumer goods from the exploited workers overseas, because Americans, in wanting cheap goods, regardless of who it exploits, are also exploiting themselves. Because the Walmart workers are the most of them are part-time, high turnover. The chances of getting a full-time job are almost nil. They do. Walmart will say they do have insurance coverage, but the premiums are so high that most people don't take it. They have been sued over and over again for forcing workers to work off the clock, not paying them for cleanup time. And
Joan, just hold on, because you brought up so many different issues, and we're running short on time. I want to make sure that Richard Vetter can talk about what about all those charges.
Well, those are very commonly heard. I debated. I was on a panel with someone from WakeUpWalmart.com yesterday, talking about some of these charges. So there's nothing new that the caller has raised. Workers exploited. Well, why do they work there? Why do they take jobs there? Why is Walmart, why when they're paying roughly what Target pays or someone else, why should they pay any more? Are they making obscene profits? They make less than 4% profit on every dollar of sales, which is moderately high in the retail business, but is nothing wildly out of line. There's no evidence whatsoever that Walmart is hurting workers in any massive way. There are lots of lawsuits brought against Walmart. There are very few that have been successful. Some have been. And incidentally, I'm the first to admit that store managers in some communities have probably treated workers inappropriately. Sure, as far as very few full-time workers, I don't think that's the case. Walmart would certainly disagree with that, although there is an interesting issue. What is full-time? There is some debate. They have a lot of workers who work 32, 34-hour weeks. rather than 40-hour weeks. They are trying to get their workers to do more, quote, flex scheduling. And my view is that that's fine if they pay if the workers are willing to do that. If the workers say, well, I don't want to do that, well, go work at Target then, or go work at Costco, or go work at a grocery store. Walmart is doing what it thinks will help it be more efficient, sure, more profitable, but also offer lower prices.
Yeah. Does Walmart treat women in particular in a discriminatory manner? There have been lawsuits regarding that.
There's a big lawsuit right now on this, and it is a class action lawsuit. It has survived to the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals, I think, in San Francisco, which is a court that has a reputation, a notorious reputation, for being overturned on appeal at the Supreme Court level. So I have no idea how that. I would be very, very surprised if Walmart loses that lawsuit.
Boy, we have a lot of callers who want to get in on this, but less than a minute to go. You want to just, in conclusion, summarize what do you think about Walmart?
Well, Walmart is not a saint, but Walmart isn't a sinner, or at least not an inveterate sinner. Like any company, they do some bad things from time to time. But on the whole, Walmart has provided low-cost goods for Americans. It has done more to help poor Americans than anyone, and I would say including most bloated government bureaucracies. It has helped middle- and low-class Americans more than probably any company in America, and I think it deserves more applause than criticism.
We appreciate your time. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Richard Vedder, co-author with Wendell Cox of The Walmart Revolution, How Big Box Stores Benefit Consumers, Workers, and the Economy. Richard Vedder is a professor of economics at Ohio University and a visiting scholar at the American Enterprise Institute. Thanks to Carmen Jackson for producing the hour, and thanks to Karen Prager for on-air production. Thank you, as always, for listening. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.